Working with the two of us need company.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 25, The Two Mrs. Messinis, and not macaroni.
No.
We have to really remember, every time I see that, it's not macaroni, it's Mancini. Think about remembering things here.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Good save, Dave. Well done.
Much to discuss up at the top. First of all, thank you to everyone who has been tweeting us their pictures of their...
Hang on.
Yes?
I don't want to hear from the Italian Defamation League over that. I just really thought that word looked like macaroni to me the first time I read it. It's not a Mancini macaroni thing. Don't get on your high horse on that. I love Italians.
Sure.
They're great. They make the good of spaghetti.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. Don't dig yourself in even deeper, Dave. Please. Please don't.
It actually looks more like manicotti, but yeah. Okay.
That is true. Back to what I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted by Dave and his anti-Italian sentiment. Anti/pro. Thank you to everyone who has been tweeting us their pictures of their very own copies of a very special 90210 book, whether you got the hard copy or the audio book or whatever you did. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We love seeing you enjoying them. Thank you so much for letting us know that you got it. The book is now, of course, out. It is for sale in stores, in person, online, everywhere. Books exist. You can get it. So thank you so much to everyone for doing that. Sarah, anything to add before I move on?
Not really. We really love seeing all these pictures of the book, which is beautiful, thanks to the illustrations by Ms. Julie Kane. And thank you so much for supporting us and for believing that this was not a bit, because it is not. It is true.
Yes. And thank you from the past to everyone who joined us for the McNally Jackson virtual trivia night, which as we record this has not happened yet, but we assume some of you were there. So thank you. We're going on faith that you were there. Moving on again with this, our Patreon episode 19 is originally we said we were going to be dropping it October 9th. But in fact, we are going to be dropping it October 2nd, because as we record this, we're only $29 away from hitting our next goal, which will be to bring you 3 bonus episodes every month instead of our current 2. So we're again going on faith that we're going to hit that in October. So we're going to go ahead and just move up the drop date for that episode 19. And the topic for that is going to be the series premiere of the WB's one season sitcom acclay, Gross Point. Very excited for this.
Which is 20 years old.
I know.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Sadly, it is not available to stream, which is crazy. It seems like such a natural to be on like the CW seed, but it's not. But
yeah, what the hell?
Crazy. But you can buy it if you want to buy the DVDs, or it possibly may be at your local library. One of our listeners asked us to point that out, that you can sometimes buy it, find DVDs still at your public library. So, you know, hit up your library. Maybe they have it. So if you've been thinking about joining us on Patreon, you should. Patreon.com/againwiththis is where you can do that. Any level of support gets you currently 2, possibly by the time you hear this, 3 bonus episodes every month. And again, as we mentioned, we will be dropping those deleted book entries every Thursday, and we will have another one of those this Thursday coming at you. All right, Sarah, are we ready to talk about the two Mrs. Macaronis? Just kidding. The two Mrs. Mancini.
Hey.
I can that say was hateful. That. I can say that. You can't.
Also, they're plumbing. Those two brothers are like, boom, boom, boom. Everything's fixed.
I get it. Sarah, are you ready?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, we're once again in that... moment in a Darren Star season that is like 48 episodes long, where it's like, we've got to be close to the end, right? Right? We're not.
No. All right, here we go with our C plot. Joe's new model trick isn't trying to be her baby's father. Oh, Joe. So Jake and Amanda are shooting pool. Guess where? Shooters. When Jake announces that he is thinking of expanding the market for his charter business, like classes and seminars? What? I love the idea that you go to work and then they're like, yeah, we're going to be having a seminar. It's at sea, so you can't escape. Okay.
Hey, if it was good enough for Road Rules.
If it was good enough for L. Ron Hubbard, anyway, and maybe photo shoots. That's his only good idea so far, but Amanda elaborately rolls her eyes at this shakedown, given that she has a photo shoot tomorrow and a location fell through, and he knows that. So Amanda says moving the shoot to the boat would add 20% to her budget, so she's going to pass. But Jake uses his further knowledge of her budget to negotiate, and since she is in the worst bargaining position, he gets her to agree to his terms pretty easily. And then it's the next day. Joe is shooting some hunk on the boat. His name is Gregory, and he flirts with her by grabbing an extra camera out of her bag and shooting her. Meanwhile, Amanda complains that Jake has not supplied all the refreshments they agreed upon. He argues there wouldn't be room for all the coolers that she demanded, and then they bicker over whether 2 hours early was even early enough for him to have gotten there in order to impress her, a new client, and whether he should give her preferential treatment. This really goes nowhere, but it will come up again in the next episode, so put a pin in that for now. After the shoot, Gregory tells Joe she's good at what she does and asks her to dinner, and she usually makes it a rule not to date the talent, but he talks her into it. And then probably regrets it, because they end up, guess where? Shooters. He demands her whole life story while he sketches her on a napkin, and she makes up a bunch of bullshit. And then he leans across the table, saying she has something in her eye as a pretext for kissing her, and then giving her the napkin with the sketch. And he says he's getting her another beer, asks if she wants something stronger than a club soda, which she does not. And he asks if she's on the wagon. And I'm sure we've talked about this before, but as a person who doesn't drink, I feel like I never get these questions anymore. Like, maybe this was a thing in the 90s and earlier. But, like, even people who don't know me never ask, like, oh, why aren't you drinking? You know, like, maybe it's just because it's TV.
Maybe it is. Maybe we as a culture finally have been trained that to ask is like, it's none of your business. Like, right. All will be revealed if it is your business. Like, people have a lot of reasons for not drinking, including being pregnant, but don't go there. I don't know.
Right.
I would never ask, but I also don't need everyone else to be drinking when I'm drinking.
Yeah.
Happy to drink alone, as you may have read in the men's room anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, however, the purpose of this exchange on this TV show is so that Joe can decide whether she's going to lie and then not in clip two.
Actually, no, I'm pregnant. Yeah, the baby's father died last month.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Must be 10 better ways to say that. You're the first man I've told. You want to leave, please feel free.
No. I want to stay and have dinner with the beautiful lady that so kindly agreed to join me.
Good save for now.
Well, it is as if Joe hadn't been looking at his face, which is like falling like a building demolition. She's telling him this whole story, which...
Yeah.
Can see in the visual aids because I made a gif, like, he's a model, not an actor, and he does not cover how he feels about this revelation. And
well, and like, the baby's father died. I mean, I sort of disagree that there's got to be a lot of better ways to say that. Like, are there really? Like,
no.
Just rip the band-aid off, I guess. But also, now that you've said it out loud, do you think you should be just dating casually?
Yeah.
And you know, like, the, you know, being pregnant is one thing, but the baby's father isn't in the picture because you killed him because he tried to kill you. Uh-huh. Like, maybe give it another couple minutes. I know, well, it's a soap, but Jesus.
Yeah. And I feel, I mean, we already tipped where this is going in, you know, my title for this storyline, but you can already kind of tell that Gregory is making plans to get out of this. That's, you know, she didn't say that she and the baby's father weren't together when he died last month, and Gregory does not ask as far as we see.
No.
So it's like, okay, sure, he died last month. Mm-hmm, let's have dinner, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the next day, when Joe is showing Allison the photos at D&D and just so being so enthusiastic about how great Gregory is, we know for absolute sure he's not going to last. And suddenly he and his pleated pants, which you can see in the visual aids, are there. And Allison leaves them alone. And Gregory says running into Joe saved him a phone call to dump her. Her whole situation is too complicated for him. And she's obviously disappointed, but lightly says it's all right. And then, for some reason, he keeps talking in clip three.
I want a family of my own, and I don't think I have it in me to take on someone else's kid. That's probably the most honest I've ever been in my life.
Dude, wow. Like, the way that he adds that tag on it, like, what do you want from her? A fucking medal? Just go. And basically,
yeah,
Joe says the network save version of that, which is, I don't know what I'm supposed to say now. Like, no fucking kidding. You know, this is such a good, efficient way for him to tell her he's not worth a damn. Like, there are certainly people who feel this way, but like, don't ever tell someone I want a family of my own and I don't think I can take on someone else's kids, even if this is how you feel about adoption. Like, keep it to yourself. This is not thing to say.
Write it in your journal.
Exactly.
And B, you were already out of it.
Yeah.
Like you said, like, just say that it's too complicated for you. It's not like she'll be like, what do you mean? She knows. She killed the baby's father.
Right.
She knows.
Yeah. Ooh. So they tell each other to take care of themselves, and he apparently misses the micro eye roll on her face because he then tries to go in for a kiss that she has to swerve away from. And this is also
what?
Visual aids is a gift because, oh my God, Gregory, read one room in your fucking life.
I mean, what is his game there? Like, in my notes, I'm like, so he figures that since he's not on the hook for a commitment and she can't get pregnant again, maybe he'll just try to bone her anyway. Like,
honestly,
buddy,
guy,
nah.
Yeah, so that's a wrap on Gregory and the storyline. Moving on to our B plot. Billy finds out the hard way that Allison is ashamed of him. When Billy gets out of the shower, he hears the tail end of Allison on the phone promising her mother that she will absolutely bring a jacket and a sweater, and then seeing him and saying she has to go. And it seems Allison's going home to Wisconsin for her dad's surprise 50th birthday party. As a 45-year-old person, I feel attacked by this math, even though I know it checks out, but I don't like it. Frankly.
Well, I just feel like it was a different time when that actor who looks 65 would be told he's turning 50. And I don't know, like, all of my grandparents looked old by the time they were 40.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's not it how it is anymore. But yeah, I also feel squeamed out by this math.
Yeah. So this is the first Billy is hearing about this event. Allison apparently already tried to weasel out of it when it first came up a month ago, but her mother is good at guilt and overruled her. And now she can't believe that in the middle of everything else she has to do, she has to fly to Wisconsin as well. And Billy is shocked that Allison has to go, whereas I am shocked that she was ever considering not going. I mean, I guess I will get less shocked about this soon. Cough. But anyway. Then Billy is shocked that Allison intends to go alone, but adds this, clip four.
Well, I guess with all those people around, nobody will notice that you're not with your fiance.
Billy.
Well, just out of curiosity, what are you telling your parents? That I had to work or I'm sick? Just pick one. They're both great statements about our relationship.
I haven't told my parents we're engaged.
What? I can't believe this. Why?
I'm waiting for the right time. Billy, they meddle in everything. I want to be able to plan our wedding without worrying about insulting anybody in the process.
Well, if you don't want your parents meddling, there are ways to tell them.
Billy, how is this suddenly our decision instead of mine?
How about it affects both of us, for starters?
Well, I can't talk about this now. I have a million things to do, and I'm already late.
Allison,
I'm sorry. I have to go.
She sucks.
Okay.
So whiny. So whiny.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to find out why Allison does not let her parents in on personal shit in her life, but he's not being unreasonable at this point. At this point.
No. I agree.
Like, it's weird that she's engaged and has been for some time and hasn't told her parents.
Yeah, that's very bizarre.
Okay. Note that I said at this point, because then Billy gets home from work that night, and clip five.
Well, I got two tickets to Wisconsin. I'm going with you.
Billy.
This ain't it, Chief.
No.
Okay.
In addition to the presumption, you got away with it. You don't have to go.
Right.
Granted, it's because she's ashamed of you. Mm-hmm. But, do you want to now blunder into that when they still think he's your, you're her roommate? It's a tie. Just take it and stay home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And eat pizza on the couch with no plate in your underpants.
God, that sounds so good. Even though I could do that tonight anyway.
Oh, yeah. So could I. I actually did do that last night. It was great. I married the right person. But look, William, you will soon learn. If it's oh, no, you can't come to your in-laws. Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah. Take the W and run quickly.
Honestly. But about this, announcement. I guess I appreciate the consistency in the writing of Billy's character, because this truly is the announcement that he arranged for Jake to move Allison's shit to New York all over again.
Yeah.
But dude, please stop making unilateral decisions. It's like he learned everything he knows about relationships from impulsive guys in rom-coms. And then every time Allison reacts to him the way a person would, which is to say being annoyed or creeped out by him being presumptuous, he doesn't learn anyway. Ugh.
No.
There.
Yeah. And this isn't even the worst aspect of it, but we'll get to it.
We will. So Billy protests that he doesn't know when else he's supposed to meet her parents if he doesn't go, since they never come to L.A. And she counters that if they announce their engagement at the party, they're going to upstage her dad, which... Okay, were you just going to, show up for the surprise and then immediately, leave from the party? Which maybe she was. Again, we're about to find out why she never goes home. But, you can just say you brought your boyfriend of over a year who you live with and then tell them about the engagement, when you're still there the next day. But, again, this is all going to become clear. So Billy reasonably asks, what is actually going on? And Allison finally admits that she doesn't know. She's always compartmentalized her life, and now everything's getting all mashed up. Billy says he's going to help, not ruin things. And Allison snaps that if he wants to go, it's fine. But she's telling her parents about the engagement her own way. Please break up. My God. Break up. Yeah. Break up.
Really?
So bad. They don't. And when we see the next... this antique cab is dropping them off at Allison's parents' house, and Allison's taking her ring off before she goes inside. And Billy snaps at her, but she repeats her concern about outshining her dad at the party. And Mrs. Parker comes out to meet them, and it is awkward immediately. Clip six.
Mom, this is my roommate, Billy.
Oh, very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Heard a lot about you.
Nothing terrible, I hope.
No, all good. So I'll go pay the driver and get the bags.
Okay. I had no idea you were bringing Billy.
Yeah, I was gonna call, but it was also last minute, and he's never seen the Midwest.
There's someone waiting to see you.
Hey.
Adam!
I didn't even hear you guys come in. God, Allison, you look so... so beautiful.
Beige.
What a surprise. It's good to see you. Billy Campbell, Adam Travell, Allison's roommate.
Why is everyone yelling all of a sudden?
To get through the awkwardness.
Also, Adam, you are a creep. Why are you there waiting to see Allison? It's creepy.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's called a telephone.
Mm-hmm. Like, do you routinely hang out with her parents? Because that's weird.
Yeah.
So Mrs. Parker brightly tells Billy that he can sleep in the attic guest room. Allison can show him where it is. And when they're upstairs alone, Billy asks who this other himbo is. And trying to sound casual, Allison says that she and Adam dated a couple times in high school and that he wrote her a letter because he wanted to get into advertising. And Billy is like, he wants to get into something, which...
Billy, that was a good line.
It is, but Billy's not quick enough to come up with that on his own. No one buys that he's that clever. And Allison says Billy's unbelievable. Billy says what's unbelievable is her keeping their engagement a secret. She should at the very least tell Adam, but she doesn't want to in case he tells her parents. Again, are they all hanging out on the reg? Like, tell him and ask him not to tell her your parents? This is all incredibly dumb.
I mean, this is a 50-year-old man, mm-hmm. like whatever his other felonious problems, spoiler, like it's not his quinceañera. You can just tell him. I don't think he cares. Like, right. Is he also singing at the party? Who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. Just tell him now.
Yeah.
Ugh, whatever.
Well, speaking of the party, the next thing we see is Mrs. Parker leading Mr. Parker in to it. He is surprised. Or pretends to be. And after briefly greeting Allison and being introduced to Billy, he is hustled off to greet other people. Then there's dancing, a brief shot of the Parkers kissing by an ice sculpture. And then we get like a split second of seeing Allison and Adam on stage on either side of a microphone before Billy is barging up and getting between them. And I would never have known what this was even about if not for our Twitter follower, Adam, no relation to Adam on the show, who let us know that what was cut out of this is Adam in the show singing Allison, the Elvis Costello song, to Allison on stage. That was cut from the DVD. So that's why it's so abrupt and why she's weird and why they're both on stage. But anyway, so that's why they're there. Billy gets between them and clip 7.
Everyone, can we please have your attention? Allison has an announcement she wants to make, and it seems only fitting that she makes it to all of you.
Billy.
You've known her all of her life, and I've asked her to marry me, and she said yes.
Okay. I mean, knowing that he did this in response to her being serenaded by this other guy makes it make a little bit more sense, but then...
That is true.
However, it also does play out exactly the way she was worried it was going to and told him she was concerned about. So again, Billy, I beg you, please stop acting like a guy in a rom-com. Please.
Yeah.
Because it's creepy.
And, I mean, you too, Adam. Like,
yeah.
Not that, you know, if we'd seen it, I don't know what it was like. But, and speaking also as someone who has, disproportionate loathing of being serenaded. Like, talk about upstaging your dad. Like, is your dad named Allison? No. Then why is this happening to any of us?
Right.
It's Allison.
Yeah. I mean, we have no idea what led up to that happening. So, it all was very strange the way it now exists. So, thanks, music rights. Ugh. And moving on. The next morning, Mrs. Parker comes outside to find Allison moping on the front yard porch swing in her ugly beige floral jean jacket that I fucking hate. It's back.
Yeah, it's bad.
So bad. Mrs. Parker very briefly brings up the announcement and what a surprise it was before very waspily changing the subject to gossip about family friends who were at the party and how that mother and daughter are sometimes on the phone for an hour. But then the subject changes back. Clip 8.
We never were real good at that sort of thing, you and me. Guess if we had been, we wouldn't have found out you and Billy were engaged same time as everybody else.
Oh, Mom, I'm sorry. I should have told you I meant to, and Billy wanted me to.
Yeah, pretty obvious he couldn't wait.
Oh, I was really angry with him. But then I realized he was right. I was the one who kept making excuses, Mom. I didn't tell you because, I guess saying it out loud to you and Dad would have made it real, and I just didn't know if I was ready for that.
Is it because your dad and I have had our troubles in the past?
No, Mom. I was afraid that I wasn't ready to make that big a commitment.
Do you love him?
Yes. Yes, very much.
Well, personally, I always liked Adam, but I guess maybe you've outgrown him. Maybe all of us.
Yeah.
Shut up, Mrs. Parker.
Yeah. The one good thing in this scene that I thought was well observed, and there's a gif of this in the visual aids as well, is while Mrs. Parker is talking, they cut back to Courtney Thorne Smith, and she does this thing with her jaw where she just sort of like sets it to one side where it's like, okay, like just this universal, yeah. Like, I guess we're doing this, but I can't say anything, but got it, but fuck this. It's just like a lot of nonverbal, you know, accretion of, you know, daughter hassle.
Mother-daughter shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking as a daughter, I felt that. So well done, Courtney Thorne Smith, with that very small moment.
Yeah.
You know, there's more to it in this case than I have experienced. Again, spoiler, we'll get to it. But yeah, I thought that was nicely handled.
It's also clear that Allison's dowdy presentation is perhaps genetic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very, very big cardigan. Very big.
And again, for someone who is married to a 50-year-old and, like, had his child, this woman looks like 70. Like, she looks real old.
Yeah.
Moving on. Inside, Billy is sous-chefing for Mr. Parker while he makes something or other. Allison stands in the doorway eavesdropping while Mr. Parker describes what she was like as a kid, which is a nerd. No surprise to anyone. He sends Billy down to the basement for chicken broth, and before Billy comes back up, he stops to mess with a model train set for a second and calls for Allison to come down. And she's frozen on the couch, so he jogs back up, bringing a doll from a box. And she explains that she doesn't go down to the basement and doesn't bother pretending not to be creeped out by the super creepy doll that he shoves at her. And when Billy
goes... It looks like it was in a fire.
Yeah.
And also, don't touch people's train sets. Like, my dad wasn't even that into his train set, and Billy would have drawn back a stump. Like, don't touch people's shit.
Ugh. Yeah, that's a good point. So when Billy goes back to resume helping with dinner, Allison just unceremoniously drops the doll in the trash. And I know we're supposed to find this upsetting, but as Sarah said, this doll looks real rough. Like, it's been through some shit, but seriously, fuck that doll.
Yeah.
Like, that doll belongs in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
Later that night, Billy and Allison are bringing their luggage down when Adam comes to the house to further underline the fact that scenes between him and Allison have been deleted from this DVD, clip 9.
I came to apologize. I went about this all wrong.
Oh, no. No, I should have said something.
Yeah, we all should have. You got some voice there.
Yeah, thanks. Responsible for about the most embarrassing moment of my life.
Not on this end.
Okay. Thank God we have a Twitter follower who remembers what happened, because otherwise we would have no idea what any of this was about.
Yeah. Jesus. I just assumed that it was because there was that long silence and Billy's like, so, cat got your tongue? Like,
Yeah.
And I remember wondering, why didn't you just use that expression? Now I know. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah. So Allison runs upstairs to get her purse, awkwardly leaving Billy and Adam alone, whereupon Adam tells Billy he's a lucky man, and Billy fills the silence thusly, clip 10.
So you've known the Parkers for years. They're nice people.
Yeah. A little weird, but nice.
Weird? How?
It's kind of hard to explain. It's almost as if they're too formal. Too polite.
What do you mean?
Well, like you said, I've known them for years, and I hardly know them. You know, if you ask me, Allison moved to L.A. to get away from them.
Can't imagine what that refers to. I'm sure we'll never find out.
Perhaps we will, perhaps we won't. Just kidding, we will. In bed, back in L.A., Billy interrogates Allison about Adam. Why did they break up? Did her dad like him? Did he try to break them up? She claims not to remember, but that whatever her father did or didn't do was because he wanted the best for her. Billy says his dad was the same, and also that he was always hugging Billy, which Billy thought everyone's dad did until he got to junior high. Which, I thought Billy's dad was an ogre that Billy tried to avoid and whose sisters were all estranged from him, but okay. This is interesting. But fine. Anyway. Allison says there wasn't much hugging in her family, but it doesn't mean they didn't care. It's not better or worse. It's just different. Billy, he says, plans to hug the hell out of his wife and children and wants to start with Allison right now. And she submits, but does not seem that happy about it. And later, Allison has a black and white nightmare in which she hears Billy calling her down to the basement, sees the model train on its tracks, we see a light bulb swinging on a cord, the creepy doll's head turning, its eyes blinking, and then it's weeping blood, and then the light bulb bursts. Allison wakes up gasping while Billy slumbers obliviously, of course, how else, and she is spooked, but what does it mean? Mirror, father, mirror.
I know. Also, the kid is dressed like Holly Hobby. It's exactly what you think.
Finally, our A plot. Jane inherits some money, which Sydney and Michael try to steal. Remember Jane's bitchy boss, Kay Beacon? She's back and she still hates Jane. Clip 11.
If I tell a landlord I only have a dollar for rent, who are you to tell him I really have $1.50?
I didn't say that, Kay.
You contradicted me right in front of him.
I didn't know he was the landlord. It's not his mistake. I'm sorry.
You're sorry, and I've lost all credibility. Now he thinks I lie to him about everything.
Kay, you do.
Lie to landlords. It's praxis. Shut up, Jane.
Yeah. Also, okay. Now you're standing up to Kay? Sure.
Right.
Please write Jane the same in 2 consecutive episodes challenge. This will not occur.
No, it won't. They are stomping onward when Kay gets a call on her cellular telephone, but it's for Jane, and apparently it's bad news. Over to the beach house, where Sydney's throwing some kind of tea for all the doctor's wives when Jane shows up and, with no preamble, announces that their grandmother died in her sleep. Perhaps she had just heard what happened to her anachronistic wedding gown. Just kidding. Sydney tries to act hard about it and pretty much states that she doesn't intend to go to the funeral because she's not a hypocrite. Jane protests that their grandmother loved Sydney and tried to reach out to her, and Sydney brats that her arms apparently weren't long enough to reach past Jane, which is a good line that I do believe Sydney would come up with on her own.
Yeah. Totally.
So that night, Jane's on the phone with her mother when Allison comes by to return a bridesmaid dress fabric sample. Apparently, Allison already heard about this loss because she expresses her condolences. Jane thanks her and then dishes that her grandmother left Sydney out of the will, but bequeathed Jane $100,000. Jane doesn't think she can take it because it's profiting from her death. What? Like, what do you think a will is? I don't even understand this logic at all.
I don't either, especially given what just the part of the will reading that we hear. This woman was fucking loaded.
She was really rich. Allison says that Jane's grandmother loved her, which she probably couldn't know, rather than saying that she wanted Jane to have the money, which is clear from the bequest. But anyway, Jane says she never did anything special to distinguish herself to their grandmother, and that Sydney never really did anything wrong, which, you know, doubtful given what we've seen of Sydney in our lives. Allison brings up Sydney's marriage to Michael, and Jane vaguely mentions Sydney having something on Michael, but skips the specifics and says she's just glad it's keeping him away from the complex. But it turns out he's not staying away from the complex. He is, in fact, right now, out in the courtyard, menacing Matt and demanding that Matt tell Jane he lied about the lab report and get the incriminating evidence back from her. Matt says it's impossible. If Michael wants it, he'll need to go get it. Or does he need to ask Sydney's permission first? And Michael rears back and socks Matt right in his pretty face. And then things get worse in clip 12.
Don't you ever touch me again. When's the last time you said that to a guy, huh, Matt? Go to hell, Michael.
I'm gonna get you for what you've done. When you least expect it.
We'll see.
Will you, though? Really? So what you can't hear is that was Matt responding to Michael's one punch by punching him and then also kicking him, which is pretty great.
Yeah. I do love that Calabro is really able to, like, when he's being just, like, packaged up like the garbage he is, like, Robert basically taking him out like a bag of trash. Uh-huh. A few episodes ago, or however many episodes ago that was, 40, I've lost track.
Yeah.
And this too, like, he is not afraid to look foolish.
Yeah.
Like, you would never see Jason Priestley do this.
No,
but
it's true.
Calabro's just like, well, the audience needs this because, you know, like a Weeble, I can't really be kept down, but let me just look defeated in this scene. I don't know. It's good.
Well, he knows
he's a pro.
He knows what he is. He's a heel, right? So he's playing it like a heel, and God love him.
Yeah.
So the next morning, Amanda comes down in her vest with nothing under it and business mules, which you can see in the visual aids.
Jesus.
Jane waylays her to ask her advice about starting her own business and tells her about the inheritance. Amanda kind of rudely calls her $100,000 of seed money a good start, but says she decided against starting her own business and went for lower risk investments instead, like the building, since money comes in regardless and there's a lot of risk in starting a design firm. She goes on, clip 13.
Running your own design firm is a major undertaking.
What, you don't think I have the talent?
On the contrary, I think you're very talented. And there's not even a glimmer of a man in your life to distract you. Look, here's what you should do. Use $80,000 for startup costs and the rest to keep you on your feet. Anyway, I have to go. Call me if you need me.
Yeah, if you need a shade tree, don't bother. I'll just come over. Unbelievable. Also, now all of a sudden we're like in the Amanda as like Marcusa Lemonisa. Yeah. Like, why is she just like rule number one of business? Like, you are in advertising. Mm-hmm.
Well,
what?
Yeah. I mean,
whatever, fine. But she's also bad at business advising. So this is annoying to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, the show needs to have one person who has money, and then they're the person that has to know things about money. And formerly that was Joe. And now it's Amanda, even though Amanda, you know, we know she got her money from her dad's crooked investments. But still, the show is like hoping we forget about that part, I think.
Well, yeah, that it's like, is she going to know about design firms right. next?
Yeah.
I bet she would. Well, I'll get back to it. Let's proceed.
So back at the empty storefront where we saw Kay and Jane the other day, the landlord is telling Kay he's not going to rent it to her. And then Jane dramatically emerges from the shadows to say he has a new tenant. And Kay laughs in her face and says she's making a stupid mistake. And Jane says she's tired of being stepped on and smugly takes off. Then Michael comes home.
Okay, I do actually have to interrupt you because before that scene, in the establishing shot, Jane Mancini Designs, the sign is already up.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I missed that.
So like, hey, Kay, here's how you know you're not getting the lease. Look up.
Whoops. That's funny.
So bad. I know they filmed these like five per week, but Jesus, guys, come on.
Boy. So then Michael comes home to find Sydney moping in the dark. She tells him that her grandmother died, which was the day before. She only just now got around to being sad about it. Michael says he's sorry, not putting much effort into sounding sincere. Sydney knows she should go to the funeral and the will reading, even though she knows there won't be anything in it for her. Clip 14.
Should I go listen to a lawyer prove that the only one Graham loved was Jane?
And me?
What are you talking about?
I played up to her and she loved me like a son. She sent Jane and I so much money and presents while I was in medical school. It was like having my own private scholarship.
Michael, you don't know what she said about you behind your back.
Think I care? That didn't stop Graham from sending those checks. Hey, we're going to Chicago, Sid.
I want to find out what Graham left me.
Well, here we go. As Sarah indicated... She left a lot of people a lot of shit. I guess they didn't feel like paying a bunch of extras for a funeral scene, because we skip that and go straight to the very formal reading of the will. People get houses, silver, this bitch had a Chippendale desk, jewelry. And then, just as Michael and Sydney creep in the back, clip 15.
And $100,000 of my residuary estate to Dr. and Mrs. Michael and Jane Mancini.
It's just Jane Mancini now.
Now we all know that's not exactly true, don't we, Jane?
Sydney. No, Mother. Hello, Jane.
Perfect timing, Sid. Come to pay your respects to Graham's money?
No, I came to pay my respects to Graham.
I'm Dr. Michael Mancini.
We're divorced. Graham never changed her will to reflect that. It's just a technicality.
Well, I believe that the natural bounty and affection would go solely to Jane.
Natural bounty and affection?
You can use all the legalese you want, counselor, but I didn't hear anyone say provided they're still married.
Don't even think about trying this, Michael. I'll contest it all the way.
Well, it sounds to me like half the money is legitimately his, Jane. Why don't you get off your high horse?
How dare you show this disrespect to my mother's memory? Haven't the two of you done enough?
Why am I always in the wrong?
Oh, please, Sydney.
You never gave me a chance. I've always had to live under the cloud of perfect Jane.
That's not true.
You turned Graham against me, Mom against me.
Stop it, the two of you.
You turned everyone against you, Sydney. You can't push people away and expect them to love you.
Look in the mirror, Jane. You are the queen of pushing people away.
Come on, Mom, let's get out of here. That money's mine, Michael, and you're never going to see a penny of it.
You're wrong, Jane. I'll see half.
I mean, aside from what the lawyer says, it seems pretty cut and dried. She left the money to them both. Like, tough shit. You know, if you wanted her to change her will, should make sure that when you got divorced, hey, give her a call. Let her know the divorce is finalized. Cut him out, you know?
Yeah. Or don't.
Right.
Leave him something separately.
Yeah. Anyway, tough titties, Jane. Outside, Sydney sighs that nobody loves her, not even Michael. And he reminds her that they're married. And she pouts that it's only on paper, which he doesn't dispute, but says they have to strategize, asking her to remember what Graham did say about him. She doesn't want to dredge up the painful memories, so he has to try to coax them out in clip 16.
Michael, I barely remember anything.
You don't remember wishing when you visited your grandmother that she treated you the same way she treated Jane? Huh? Feeling the same way with your parents? Asking Jane for anything and feeling like a screw-up? Hey, Sid, this is your way of getting back.
Michael, I don't want to get back. I just want to get away. They hate me. Everybody hates me.
Except me. I love you.
Oh, Michael, you do.
Sure.
Really?
Sure, you and me? We're a team, right?
You don't know how long I wanted you to say that. Michael, I love you so much. Tell me again, please.
Look, Sid, I love you, all right? Are you with me on this? Or not?
Anything, Michael, anything you want.
It's just worth noting that he knows that's the pedal that he can step on whenever he wants her to do whatever he wants. And sometimes he does, and sometimes he would rather just hurt her. And it's, you know, the writing is good sometimes, and I think that that's psychologically true of what this person would be like if he were real.
Yeah, operant conditioning, especially for, I mean, Laura Layton is really so much better than this writing deserves at somehow making this person who, like, is a borderline personality, I think, mm-hmm. not a doctor, sort of internally consistent. And, like, you can see her struggling to resist needing him to say this to her and resist believing it. And then she just can't. Like, she is so pathetic.
Yeah.
And this is a soap. But this is like master's level acting that she does with this part, which I think, like, I think she really makes the whole show. Like,
oh, yeah.
I know that we were like, oh, my God, when is Amanda going to get here? When is this really going to start being what it is? But I think Sydney is actually the engine of the show.
I agree. She's really good. And the two of them are really good. He brings so much out of his scene partners. Like, it, and when Marsha Cross comes back, you see it with her too.
Like,
how good they are opposite each other.
Yeah.
Because she has such a different energy. Like, her brand of crazy is also crazy, but in a very different way.
Yeah.
And the stuff that they find with each other is so interesting and so good to watch.
And it really does make up for a lot of shots of Andrew Hsu with his mouth hanging open. Oh, I will say that.
So true. And a lot of Jane sucking, speaking of which, when we see her next, she's setting up the space she rented while Amanda sits on a couch, not really helping, but complimenting her on the great start. And the guy who just delivered her furniture tells Jane what she owes him, COD, because I guess this was before credit cards were common. And she dodges that she spoke to his manager and he's going to send her a bill. And the guy says that's not what his paperwork says. And she insists that someone's made a mistake and it's not her. But between that obvious lie and Jane sending back an extra office chair she didn't order, Amanda can tell that something's up and asks her about money problems. And Jane tells her what happened at the reading and that the funds are frozen until the matter is settled. And Amanda guesses that the next crisis is going to be Jane missing her next month's rent, which is a very on-brand question for Amanda to ask. Jane promises Amanda will have it. Amanda can't believe Jane did all this before she actually had the money, which she's not wrong. But obviously, Jane knows she fucked up and doesn't want to hear about it from one of the two landlords she now has because of said fuck up. That night, Michael and Sydney are happily eating dinner and apparently not at all concerned by the footsteps that we hear approaching like 10 minutes before we actually see Jane appear on the deck and then let herself in, threatening to go to the authorities with the lab report if Michael doesn't stop going after the inheritance. She's the one causing the problem, he says. He would be perfectly happy splitting it. He also doesn't believe that she would sell out Matt for $50,000. And Jane looks to Sydney for support, I guess, but Sydney thinks that she should have gotten half and that Jane must have said something to Graham to get Sydney cut out of the will. And also notes that Jane is not fucking a lawyer anymore, so if she fights much longer, she's going to end up spending it all on legal fees. And Jane snaps that the two of them deserve each other and that she would rather see Michael dead than give him half the money. And Michael doesn't have to say anything in response, so he doesn't, and Jane impotently turns on her heel and leaves. And I don't mind, because, as I said, Jane kind of sucks, and she deserves to lose this battle because she's being ridiculous. And the will was, as I said, quite clear, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the fact that you spent his 50 grand before you had a single dollar in hand is not on him. It's nope. Like the one thing that isn't, but don't be an idiot.
That's right. Let us close up this episode by naming our episode MVP. We keep doing this, but I got to give it to Laura Layton for the reasons that we just said. She's so good.
Yeah, she's really good. I'm going to go with Graham, though.
for creating drama posthumously.
I mean, she had a lot of stuff. She seemed like she enjoyed her life, and then she went peacefully. So,
yeah, I love it. Least valuable player. Greg, for having some very retrograde ideas about both adoption and fucking single mothers.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Billy, because... it's Billy.
Yeah, I guess we can't say Mr. Parker yet.
No. Soon. On that note, next time on Again With This, Amanda hires a stalker for the complex. Allison investigates her complex with the help of Felicity's dad. And the writer's room needlessly complexifies the chain of command at Mancini Designs. Not to mention Sydney's probation. Your stomach lining will be putting us on probation when you check out our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website. That's at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our book and to virtual events we're doing to support it, so don't be a squeef, bookmark it today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm Graham Warbucks, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Ticket to Wisconsin, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Something Stronger, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.